George Bugs dead? Last word he said, don't you put no shortening in my bread. George Buck is dead. Last word he said, don't you put no shortening in my bread.
This is part one of the radio adaptation of A Great American Tapestry, a five-part audio documentary based on the film of the same name. I'm David Weintraub, the director and producer. This program is a production of the Center for Cultural Preservation, based in Hendersonville, North Carolina, and WNCW Radio. It's based on the film A Great American Tapestry, The Many Strands of Mountain Music, which is currently touring the region and is available on DVD with more information at saveculture.org. The film was made possible in part by Paul and Simone Shoemaker, Carola and Stuart Cohn, the Perry and Rudnick Endowment Fund, Jim and Barbara Neal, Helen Bishop, and Adept Word Management. Southern Appalachian mountain music is often characterized as a cultural legacy spanning hundreds of years that arose from the Ulster Scots and traditional music from Scotland and Ireland. Olive Dame Campbell, founder of the John C. Campbell Folk School, and Cecil Sharp, the noted collector of English ballads and folk dancers, were known for collecting hundreds of old ballads from western North Carolina mountains. But according to David Wisnant, in his Watershed book, All That Is Native and Fine, Campbell and Sharp's music collecting had a serious deficit. They excluded whole categories of music prevalent in the times, including instrumental music, popular songs, and religious music. Most of what they left by the wayside were music traditions not of English pedigree. And that's where our story begins, reclaiming Southern music traditions. We begin our story with Dom Flemons, Grammy Award-winning co-founder of the Carolina Chocolate Drops.
When we think of American music, of course there is this European influence, but what makes it American is the extra flavors that went in with all this stuff. And of course, there were different traditions that represented both of these other tribes, you know, because of course you have melodies that come from Ireland and Scotland, and there's some really great stuff like Soldier's Joy, and but you also have songs like Shortening Bread, which are songs that have a little bit more rhythmic emphasis compared to melodic emphasis. And those reach into that sort of African-American and Native American tradition. And when the two things combine, it's a perfect combination. And I mean, and that's what makes American music American, is all of that stuff coming together.
Warren Wilson College Appalachian History professor Phil Jameson literally wrote the book on the lost history of African-American music and dance in his recent offering, Hoedowns, Reels, and Frolics.
When we talk about traditional music, there's certainly vocal traditions and there's instrumental traditions. And in the British Isles, the ballad tradition is generally a cappella, solo singing. It's not group singing, it's not accompanied with instruments. And that tradition certainly came over here intact, and people still sing many of the old ballads that can be traced back. But if you look at the vocal traditions here in the mountains, there are so many other elements to that tradition. Parlor songs from the 1800s and Tin Pan Alley songs and gospel songs and shape note singing and blues songs and many of those other traditions involve harmony singing and involve backing up with an instrument, which you wouldn't have found in the old ballad tradition. So that's something that changed in this country.
Although the fiddle certainly came from Europe, few realize that the foremost fiddle players in the South, as far back as the 1600s, were African Americans.
With the instrumental traditions, the earliest instrument that was brought across would have been the fiddle. And the fiddle or the violin, as you might want to call it. And those instruments were certainly used for the dance music in the British Isles, and they were used in this country. This would have been the instrument that was used on the frontier for dances. There were no other instruments. And the reason the fiddle made it into this tradition is not only if you had a fiddle, it was small and easy to carry, but it was an instrument that could be manufactured on the frontier.
According to C.C. Conway, author of African Banjo Echoes, the fiddle became the centerpiece of African-American music because slave owners prevented their slaves from playing African drums, worried that within the percussive undertones, they were secretly communicating slave rebellions.
Blacks were the primary dance fiddlers for blacks and whites on the plantations, as well as often in the mountains. The first reference known to me of a black fiddler is Accomack, Virginia, 1690, where a black fiddler played for whites to dance. And then all through the 1700s, blacks were the primary dance fiddlers on all the plantations. And they also probably became the first dance callers, as identified in I think it's an 1830 reference to a dance, again in New Orleans. So blacks were tremendously influential through their fiddle playing.
Although the fiddle is strongly associated with the Scots-Irish tradition, Al-Jabbar, one of the foremost musicologists in the country, believed that since the fiddle's history in Scotland and Ireland was still fairly young, the fiddle tradition in America evolved separately than that which came from the British Isles. Jabbar called the fiddle traditions close cousins rather than a direct lineage. Cece continues.
The blacks were the primary fiddlers of the 1700s, which is the same time that the Scots-Irish are arriving. So I think they probably got just as excited about it. And actually, black influence upon white fiddle playing predates banjo influence. And so I think that's when it was happening. And you begin to see crooked tunes and syncopated tunes. And so I think there was, just as minstrelsy became very exciting to black and white players at a certain time, I think even before that, it was very exciting for fiddle players.
Many people think of the Southern Appalachians as a predominantly white community with a very sparse population of black folks. However, the black population was much higher percentage-wise in this area before the Great Migration. Phil Jameson continues.
When people think of the hillbillies in the southern mountains, they often think of white people, and that is the common impression. And it is true that there's not a lot of black folks in the mountains, but what I discovered by looking at old census records that the proportion of blacks in the mountains used to be much higher than it is now. And in fact, the very first census in Asheville in 1800, one-third of the population were slaves. Obviously, it took a lot of work to cut down all the trees and clear the land, and there was a lot of work to be done. The earliest settlers brought slaves with them, and it wasn't like huge southern plantations, but might be one or two slaves with a family to help get the work done. And so there were certainly black folks in the mountains, and certainly Native Americans, Cherokee, around here. Many of the Cherokee intermarried with whites very early on. So you have reports of people in a Cherokee village doing some of their own ceremonial dances, and then some of the reels and such from the British Isles they would be doing as well. So things got mixed up very early on.
Ted Olson, Appalachian music professor at East Tennessee State University, picks it up from there.
African Americans have been in Appalachia since the 18th century and have shared aspects of culture all that time. If one goes into the 19th century, you know, into the period of the antebellum period, African Americans lived in virtually every county in Appalachia, I think, except for one. And so they were very much part of the Appalachian social network and a very important part of the economy, of course, of Appalachia.
Many people wonder how the fiddle played such a prominent role in African-American culture. It has everything to do with the subservient role that blacks played to whites as slaves and indentured servants. Phil Jameson continues the story.
Playing music for a social gathering used to be the role of a servant. Old King Cole called for his fiddlers three. And in this country, the servants were black. There were certainly white fiddlers who played for family and friends at small community gatherings. But if it was a public dance, what I discovered, what surprised me, is that the fiddlers invariably were black or Native American, but more likely black. And this goes way back to colonial times, and when you think about it, it makes sense, is that if you were African American, whether you were free or enslaved, and you're in this country, if you learned how to play that European fiddle and play the music for the white people wanted to dance to, you would be in a better position in life. You wouldn't be out there working in the fields. You would be playing in the big house for the white people. You would be given better education, sometimes musical education, supplied with an instrument. And so I found instances of black fiddlers playing for white dancers going way back to the 1600s. And this was throughout the U.S., not just in the South, but in the North as well, in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, everywhere. It was black people playing music for white people. And in Africa, there's actually a fiddling tradition that goes way back to the 13th century. So the idea of bowing an instrument was not foreign to folks from Africa. But if you learn the Europeans' violin and learn that style of music, you'd be in a better place. And what I see happening is that the musical styles changed in this country so that the fiddle tunes had elements to them that were not found in the British Isles, and that would have been the result, whether it's syncopation, syncopated bowing patterns and other things that would have been added by these black fiddlers. If you look at advertisements for runaway slaves, many of them refer to so-and-so being an excellent fiddler, sometimes banjo player too, but fiddlers. An enslaved person who could play music for the white people was highly valued.
Part two of our show, The Great American Tapestry, continues tomorrow with Rhiannon Giddens, Justin Robinson, David Holt, and many others, focusing on the banjo tradition.
George Butt's dead. Last word said, don't you put no shortening in my bread. Don't you put no shortening in my bread now, now. Don't put no shortening in my bread.
This program was produced for WNCW by Kim Clark.